Hello, and you are listening to Eco Justice Radio on KPFK Los Angeles and KPFT Houston, a project of SoCal 350 Climate Action. Our show presents environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame, featuring voices not necessarily heard on mainstream media. Welcome, I am Jessica Aldridge. On today's show, The Soil Food Web, Healing the World's Ecosystems, host Carrie Kim will be interviewing Dr. Elaine Ingham, founder and president of The Soil Food Web Incorporated and director of The Soil Food Web School. Dr. Ingham has advanced the knowledge about the soil food web for nearly four decades and has been conducting pioneering research and advocacy ever since. Recognized as one of the world's foremost soil biologists, she's passionate about empowering ordinary people to bring the soils in their community back to life. Her soil food web approach has been used to successfully restore and regenerate the ecological functions of soils on six continents. The Soil Food Web School's curriculum was designed to be accessible to individuals who wish to train and embark on a meaningful and impactful career that will help ensure the survival of all life.
Aloha, this is Carrie Kim. Listeners, mahalo for tuning in today. We have with us Dr. Elaine Ingham, founder of the Soil Food Web School and one of the world's foremost soil biologists, joining us to talk about the soil food web and empowering people to restore soil and microbiology locally and globally. The UN has classified at least 40% of the Earth's land as degraded. That figure is estimated to be somewhere between 1 billion, even up to 6 billion hectares of degraded land. Much, if not most, of this degradation can be attributed to human activity, particularly that of modern agriculture, its impacts and methodologies. Land degradation affects the physical health of all life, biodiversity, the nutrient cycling of plants, the quality of our air, water, and food, and our access to them. Dr. Elaine's soil food web approach has successfully been implemented to restore the ecological functions of soils on more than 5 million acres of farmland around the world. And she's here today to share deep insights about how to ensure the continuance of all life, beginning with the regeneration of soils where we live. Many thanks for joining us on the show today, Elaine. Okay. Thank you for decades of dedication.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I feel honored to be here to answer your questions or chat about things.
We owe much to you for your decades of learning and practicing all of the expertise you've garnered over the years. And we first want to thank the Tongva ancestors for their continuing presence, legacy, and stewardship of the area. Our show comes to you from the ancestral lands of the Tongva. And listeners, you know, there are many land acknowledgements happening today, but it's not enough just to acknowledge the land. We actually need to act on behalf of the lands and of the First Nations peoples wherever we live. So may we all continue in that effort. And then starting at the beginning, could you explain to us what is the soil food web? In brief, I mean, I know we can have you here for a week talking about that alone.
But. Absolutely. Well, basically, the soil food web is these sets of microorganisms that live in the soil, interact daily with plants. And in that, those interactions, there are seven different benefits to the plants for having these microorganisms living and growing around their root systems. So the characters in the soil food web are bacteria, and we want to make sure that we're always selecting for beneficial bacteria. So in general, we have to have things in that root system area have to be aerobic. You can't have compacted anaerobic soils because you're not going to be able to grow a plant. They can't get their roots down without those roots being killed. So it's very important to understand that we've got to select for the beneficials. And so with bacteria, we want to make certain that it's aerobic. So we get all of the thousands of species of bacteria that are unique to the biome mm-hmm. that we're working in. The second okay. group that we want to understand is fungi. And mm-hmm. fungi grow as long threads, and it's some of the most beautiful pictures in the world are of the these organisms interacting in the soil, and all this activity and things that they're doing is just amazing to watch. So when you've got a good, healthy soil, there's lots of activity, lots of things going on. It's when you look at your soil using a microscope and it's like, hey, guy, anybody moving in here? Anything happening? Nothing's mm-hmm. going on. You might get your first clue that there's something terribly wrong with your soil. And in fact, you don't have soil, you have dirt. And you're not mm-hmm. going to grow plants in dirt. Just using Mother Nature's approach. If you've got dirt, you're going to have to use pesticides and herbicides and all of those very toxic, very expensive materials to mm-hmm. try to get your plant to have any kind of production. So we've talked mm-hmm. about the bacteria and the fungi. Mm-hmm. They have mm-hmm. very different functions in soil. So they, you know, understanding how these two things interact with your root system is very important. pH is caused by these organisms. The kinds of decomposition is caused by these organisms doing their jobs. Well, you know, mm-hmm. you can get too many bacteria and too many fungi. And so mm-hmm. you could tie up all your nutrients in those bacteria and fungi, and your plant would be up a creek. So we have to have, all of your nutrients are in the broom closet and we can't get the broom closet open. So what are you going to do? Well, so you die. Well, Mother Nature mm-hmm. has a plan for that. She's has protozoa, which are bacterial mm-hmm. feeders, almost strictly bacterial feeders. And there mm-hmm. are those protozoa that are meant for anaerobic conditions. So there's a mm-hmm. really easy way for you to see if your soil is turning into dirt. Because if you've got too many of the anaerobic indicators, you mm-hmm. are not going to be growing your crops. You're not going to get the yield you want. You're not going to get the nutrients in your crops. So protozoa, we want to see lots of flagellates and a lot of mm-hmm. amoebae. We do not want to okay. be seeing those ciliates. Okay. The next group are the nematodes. And there mm-hmm. are four different kinds of nematodes. Our bacterial feeders that, amazingly mm-hmm. enough, they eat bacteria. So they're going to, but between the protozoa and the nematodes, they're going to keep the populations of the bacteria and at a stable level, not too much activity, not too little. Mm-hmm. The next group of nematodes are the fungal feeding nematodes. And of course, they go after mm-hmm. the fungi, releasing nutrients right. from that fungal biomass. And mm-hmm. there's the stability for your fungal communities. These mm-hmm. nematodes are going to make certain that they don't get to be too great in number, but then they aren't going to be too little in number. Mm-hmm. We then have predatory nematodes, and those mm-hmm. predatory nematodes typically consume the disease-causing nematodes. So they mm-hmm. are predators on nematodes, but they are right. specifically taking out the bad guys, the mm-hmm. root feeders. And so those root mm-hmm. feeding nematodes attack your root system whenever the immune system of your plant is inadequate. Well, what is this immune system of the plant? It takes the bacteria and the fungi, the protozoa and the nematodes to be in the proper balances for that plant mm-hmm. to get the nutrients that it needs so that plant can turn on its immune system. If you don't have mm-hmm. these microorganisms in the soil, your plant can't turn on its immune system. And so diseases mm-hmm. and pests will attack and consume and get rid of them. And really, when you look at these disease-causing organisms that are killing plants, something's mm-hmm. wrong with your soil, because this shouldn't be happening if you've got a good, healthy soil. Mother Nature mm-hmm. sends in the diseases and the pests to take care of plants that are not supposed to be there. The nutrient cycling in the soil isn't adequate for them. There's something very different. This plant shouldn't be present. And so mm-hmm. the diseases and pests are really meant to take care of the things that aren't supposed to be there. That's how Mother Nature does it. And so when we're looking at the soil, we don't want to see any roof-feeding nematodes. We don't want to see any of the protozoa that like anaerobic conditions. We've got to make mm-hmm. certain all these characteristics of the soil are what we need to balance nutrient cycling, to get rid of the weeds, to have enough water being retained mm-hmm. in the soil, all of these different benefits for the plant. And so as we go from early successional, highly disturbed systems into less mm-hmm. disturbed, they've been here longer, they're growing different kinds of crops, that ratio of fungi to bacteria is what controls that mm-hmm. shift, that movement through selection, through succession. And so mm-hmm. people
all
have
the way
always
up to forest.
Yep, all the way back up to forest. So strictly bacterial, that means you're growing weeds. If you look in your soil mm-hmm. and all you see are bacteria, well, mm-hmm. Your weeds are going to be growing better than anything. So how do you deal with right. that? You've got to get more fungi into the system. You got to get more protozoa, more nematodes. And so mm-hmm. we start to build that fungal community. So now you grow veggies. Now you grow tomatoes. You keep going on a little bit further. You have highly productive grasslands. That's what you want to have, cows and horses and sheep and all of those, you know, grass grazers. We want them to be in that perennial grassland, which is an equal biomass of fungi to bacteria. Not early in succession, it was just bacteria. Well, if it's 75% mm-hmm. bacteria, 25% fungi, you're going to be growing veggies and kale and kale and brassicas, mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. You get up to the row crops, and what we want mm-hmm. is an equal balance of fungi to bacteria. And you'll get maximum mm-hmm. yields. You'll get maximum nutrient concentration. And so, mm-hmm. you know, it's now perfect food for you and I to be consuming. But if we mm-hmm. look at the nutrients that are in our chemically raised plants, we are lacking the nutrients to keep people healthy. You've got to eat 10 oranges or 20 oranges. You know, these kinds of comparisons are made all the time. You got to eat 20 oranges now in order to get what you used to get in one orange. So think about how much more food you've got to eat and you're to get the nutrients that you need. No wonder we have obese people. No wonder we have folks that are giant size, because their body is saying, feed me, I don't have the nutrients. I don't have the nutrients. You got to feed me more. Well, they're eating empty calories. So you can mm-hmm. see where all of this impinges in so many ways on human health. We are what we eat, and you better be eating the good stuff, not the junk. Okay. So,
Well, you know, you had mentioned also that it's possible for all of the nutrients to be tied up in fungi and bacteria. And how would one know that that was happening? Would the plants also be dying in that scenario, or what would be the indication?
Yep. The first thing you would notice is that the edges of the leaves of your crop plants mm-hmm. are, or your, you know, whatever you're trying to grow, they look yellowed. They're starting to tell you by changes in leaf color, and a lot of people notice droopiness on their plants. Mm-hmm. Where the plant just doesn't look as healthy as it was. If you ignore that, then you're going to end mm-hmm. up with plants that, you know, the stems are turning purple. You've got spots growing on things. You definitely can see some diseases starting to develop. And that's Mother Nature trying to send you this message. There's something mm-hmm. wrong with the soil. You're turning this into dirt. This is not soil. I can't stay healthy. So you want to mm-hmm. listen to nature, look at the symptoms being shown, and then apply mm-hmm. the proper biology to deal with that problem. So you just take a little soil from your pot, from around that root mm-hmm. system. You mm-hmm. mix that in like mm-hmm. one teaspoon of that soil from your plant, and you put it into 5 mils of water, or 4 mils of water, So now you have a 1-5 dilution. You shake that gently for about 30 seconds. A drop of that goes on your microscope slide. Cover slip goes on top of that. You look through there using the 400X total magnification or the 40X objective. And you start looking for these organisms. If all you see is bacteria, you're going to have a dead plant pretty soon because it's not protected. The immune system can't do what it's supposed to do. If you can see bacteria and fungi, well, what's the relative amount of space occupied by those bacteria versus space occupied by those fungi? So is it fungal dominated or is it bacterial dominated? And if that is what your plant needs, then it's going to grow very well. But if that plant needs to be higher, needs more fungi, then you got to get in there and you got to add the fungi to deal with this problem. Right. And so we help people do that. We teach them how to make compost that is only going to contain beneficial organisms that will have the proper balances of the bacteria and the fungi, the protozoa and the nematodes. So you will set up the nutrient cycling system that your plant requires. And then all of those discolorations, all of the leaves being lost, all of those spots disappear.
Yes. Well, I mean, all of this is beneficial for everyone to hear, especially given the water scenarios now. And people are probably going to see a lot more of that because they probably already are starting from a place of not good soil or already are using things like pesticides. So if you could talk a little bit more about compost and the difference between, many people will think that compost is all the same and all organic compost is all the same. They don't understand the difference in quality or like you're talking about with the populations of fungi and bacteria. And if you could talk about what is biocomplete compost and why is that essential?
Yeah, the biocomplete compost is our trademark, basically, that we've found what the minimum levels of bacteria and fungi, protozoa and nematodes need to be for any plant, no matter where in succession. It has to have these minimal levels of these organisms so that there's at least a prayer that their immune systems will turn on, that the root will get the nutrients it requires, that deep down into the soil, the structures are being built that hold water. So you don't have to water your plants in the middle of the hot, dry summer. So, you know, we're trying to train people how to make compost that will always have above that level. And so one of the most important things is that your compost should never be allowed to go anaerobic. Well, and what do you mean by anaerobic? Well, it smells bad. When you pick up the tarp, when you put your face anywhere close, as you turn that pile to get things mixed around, it smells, you know, like rotten eggs, or it smells like a decomposing carcass that you might have happened across in the woods, you know. That stink. And you know, there are a number of different organic acids only made under anaerobic conditions. They have sharp smells too. It's just disgusting when you mix all those things together. And so now you know you're going anaerobic, and you better get that pile turned as rapidly as possible. So we like to give people an understanding of what the percentages of the starting materials need to be. So it's very, very easy for you to make great compost. So we always want to have them start with 10% high nitrogen containing material because that's party food. That's going to get both your bacteria and your fungi going. And there's going to be having a grand old time in that compost pile. So we need green materials that grow bacteria. So about 30% of the pile should be green material. And the rest of the pile, 60%, should be brown material, wood chips, leaves that fell off the trees last fall, the residues left from your agricultural fields or your beds, so that those high carbon containing materials, the foods for the fungi and the foods for the bacteria are the greens, food for the fungi are the browns. And you can see that we always balance it to grow lots of fungi because what we have almost completely destroyed in our soils are those fungi and the higher level predators. So how can we get the higher level predators into our compost pile? Well, you better have lots of bacteria and better have even more fungi to be able to get what's missing back into your soil. The party part of it is we want to have lots and lots of bacteria growing, lots of different species. We want same thing with the fungi. We want lots of different species of fungi, and we want a lot of biomass. So we get the party started. So another factor that we're using in this thermophilic compost is that we want the temperature to get above the temperature that the disease-causing organisms can tolerate. So if you're above...
Stop you right there and take a little break so that we can come back and talk more about thermophilic compost.
Okay.
Hey, listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying Eco Justice Radio. We air every Monday at 9 a.m. on KPFT Houston and every Wednesday at 3 p.m. on KPFK Los Angeles. Stay connected by subscribing to Eco Justice Radio on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows and guests and get connected with us on social media. Today, you are listening to The Soil Food Web, Healing the World's Ecosystems, with host Carrie Kim and guest Dr. Elaine Ingham, founder and president of Soil Food Web Incorporated and director of the Soil Food Web School.
So, Elaine, if you could continue, we'll continue talking about thermophilic compost and why the temperatures are important in thermophilic compost.
Because we really want to make certain that we get rid of all of the disease-causing organisms. We get rid of all the weed seeds. We get rid of all of the seeds you don't want. You know, it's tomato is wonderful, right? But not everywhere in my, in all of my beds. It's, you know, pain in the, it's very aggravating to be pulling up little tomato seeds. And you're supposed to be over there in that bed, not in this bed. So we want to deal with all those seeds as well. And so it's a great way to make certain that you're not putting disease-causing organisms back into your beds. If you don't get up to those temperatures, you're very likely to be putting a disease-causing organism into your bed, and it's going to cause problems. Because there's a point where Mother Nature can't, you know, work her charms. When there's just such a massive amount of disease going into a plot, well, you're going to have a lot of disease and you're not going to be happy with the results. So let's get that, let's knock that down to below a zero point. When we look at like human pathogens that are often, you know, if you're using high nitrogen material, people often use manures for that.
Right.
And those manures always come with disease-causing organisms, or it's very, very rare for those organisms, disease organisms like E. coli or Salmonella or Shigella or Pasteurella. They're in the manure. So during that composting process, we have to get the temperature high enough. So we kill all of those guys. Right. They can't tolerate those high temperatures for a very long period. So if we get the temperatures high enough, long enough, we'll be able to deal. We know that it's safe. And if I've made compost that has met all of the time and temperatures, if it starts getting smelly, you can always punch a hole down through your compost, and that lets oxygen in all the way to the bottom. And oxygen is another thing that those disease-causing organisms cannot tolerate either. Their enzymes,
so they have anaerobic conditions.
Right. They need the anaerobic conditions because their enzymes only work atmospheric conditions where there's very little oxygen. So as soon as you get that oxygen up to normal levels that are in the atmosphere, the anaerobic organisms, the diseases are going to go, now we're going to wait until the right conditions happen. We're going to go back to sleep. And if it gets aerobic for too long at high temperature, you're even going to kill the spores. They're not going to be there either. So
Well, it's interesting for people to be able to see actually microbes breathing. I think people don't really know that, yes, they require oxygen as well, that they are aerobic organisms.
Yep, absolutely. So it's good to get people to understand all of these specific things that they want to use to combat the problem organisms.
Yeah. I think most people don't really know how to troubleshoot things when they're composting. They think it's just some very basic thing to do, but there's much more to the whole art of and science of composting. Could you talk about your feelings between people who are doing, say, cold composting, you know, where they built a Johnson Sue bioreactor and they're going to leave that compost over a year? What do you feel about those kinds of systems versus this thermophilic compost? Do you think it's as beneficial, or what are your thoughts about it?
Well, with the Johnson Sue, for example, you've got to make certain that you do get the temperatures. It doesn't for, you know, you want it above 131 degrees. They're not going to turn their piles. And so you can get some cases where you have a high concentration of fungi over here, a high concentration of bacteria, a high concentration of something you really don't want in there. But they're going to leave things long enough that quite often the human pathogens will die out, because human pathogens, they need humans in order to grow. So no humans in the pile. If you wait long enough, it will do a job. David Johnson and his wife, Sue, also take that compost that's been sitting there for quite some time, and they put it into a worm bin, or they'll add worms. And as all these organisms go through the digestive system of that earthworm, when they hit that last segment of the earthworm's digestive system, there are just a massive number of really beneficial bacteria and fungi, protozoa, maybe even nematodes in there as well. And when the human pathogens hit that soup of really good guys, all of the good guys go, look at that.
Yeah.
Dinner, lunch, tomorrow morning's breakfast. Yes. And they take out all of those bad guys. So passage through a earthworm's digestive system, or using the thermophilic approach, both of them work just fine. It's when people throw all of their waste material into a big pile over on, and they just ignore it, and it smells bad and it stinks to high heaven. No, don't use that. Honest to goodness, that's, if it's black in color, that's another good way to tell that it went anaerobic, and you could very well have some serious problems with pathogens.
So there's no way to reclaim that in any way other than doing, I mean, what would you do with that?
You would take that material, aerate it out really, really well, let it dry down, because drying will always have a very negative effect on those nasty organisms.
Got it.
And then you use that as that woody component, the brown component in your next compost pile.
And as it's dried out.
After you've done everything you can to deal with it, now let's put it back in where most of those pathogens are gone, maybe not completely, but they're on the low side. And then as you go through that normal composting process, you deal with the last segments, last few individuals of bad guys disappear because of the temperature, the aerobic conditions.
What do you feel about people who, you know, take the average person who maybe they have, they're full with their career, their family, they don't have time to actually, or maybe they're never going to engage a microscope. What do you say for people like that, but they want to do regenerative practices, or they want to compost? What would you say for these people as far as being able to know what is the condition of their soil?
Well, we have consultants all over the world that can take samples from people and look at the biology, talk with the client about what this means. Consultants all over the world that can help interpret what's going on, take a look at some of the other characteristics of walking the land, looking at what the compaction is, get your penetrometer out and take a look. We'll take some soil samples, look at what the biology is, and then what the biology needs to be in that soil, and then helping you find a source of good compost, biologically complete compost to deal with your problems. So if you're interested in finding out somebody near to your home, You go to our website, soilfoodweb.com, and look for the page that says, where's my consultant? And here, a whole picture of the planet and all those places where there are consultants. People could also, well, if you've got really busy people, they don't have time to come to our lectures.
You have a lot of free webinars, though. There's many things that you offer to the
Because so we want everybody to understand what needs to be done to get them out of this hole of not having adequate nutrition. Think about 75 years ago. Did we have stores that you would go buy vitamins from? No.
You didn't need them.
Didn't need them. Why how could it be that you wouldn't need them? Because you were getting it in your food. It was grown in proper soil. And today, it's not grown in proper soil. You're not getting the nutrients. You've got to have vitamins. And how many of those vitamins stick with you? You paid how much money? And 90% of the vitamin that you paid for just goes right on through. You should be keeping those nutrients in the soil, making sure they get into your plant. We eat that really good stuff. We decompose in a compost. We run it through a compost, and so it can go right back on the land to grow more great biology, great plants, high nutrition.
Well, this is a great place to talk about soil and water and the nutrient cycle, how they are integrated and part of one another, how they inform each other, influence one another. Could you speak about that? Because especially in California right now, you know, much of California is under water restrictions, and people don't understand that soil and water go together. Could you talk a bit about that?
When we look at a profile and go down maybe 200 feet, we can find roots of plants growing down that far, even to 250 feet. Yeah, if you've got some of the big conifer trees in your yard or in the area, their roots should be going down that far. But because the damage that we've done to the soil, we've caused compaction in almost every place you look, any place we're driving over the soil with tractors or close enough to a highway where the highway had to be put in or was put in, we've compacted all of that so that the root systems cannot grow through that compacted area. So
it's
a lot
of
times, it's like concrete. And, you know, it's like I remember many years ago, gosh, it has to be like 30, 35 years ago, being invited to come to the redwoods in California and try to determine why all the redwoods were dying. And so there were a couple of other experts that, you know, I was just one of a party of experts that came and were looking, and all of us agreed that it's the compaction. They were allowing cars to park right up next to the trees. So imagine the compaction to all of the root systems of those trees. How could they possibly stay alive? Wow. And so the Park Service made all the parking lots far, far away from the trees that they wanted to protect. And then they say to people, you got to walk on the pathways. You can't just walk everywhere, anywhere you want. Don't kill the trees by overloving them. So trying to, you know, let people see all of this, but sorry, you can't compact the soil. Right. And then it took a lot of effort to get the right microorganisms back into the soil around those root systems. And back, you know, 35 years ago, we really didn't understand the soil food web very well at all. We didn't understand that those conifer trees need massive amounts of fungi present in them. And then there's a seasonal cycle that you always have to be aware of. And conifers serve as a really great example of this. In the wintertime, the things that eat, the bacteria and the fungi, all go to sleep. As soon as it starts getting cold, they go to sleep. And then the bacteria and fungi go, wee-haw, or you've been released from my food. Who's going to eat it all? And the fungal biomass becomes so thick in a healthy forest that when you put your fingers, try to put your fingers into that soil, you can't push through it because the network of fungal hyphae are so thick. Take a shovel and try to shovel a little bit of that out. And it's just, you can pick up this whole massive amount of the soil because it's just so thick with fungi. So come springtime, all these nutrients are available to your plant. All of this is preset to say, here you go. You know, 2,000-year-old individual needs a lot of nutrients in order to maintain that biomass. And so all of this is coming out as soon as the temperature gets above freezing and all the snow melts, then out come all the microarthropods, out come all of the nematodes, out come all the earthworms, and they chow down on this massive concentration of fungal biomass. And come June, you can't even detect that there are fungi in a high concentration in that soil. That's how much nutrient cycling's happened by the fungi and the bacteria being eaten by the protozoa, the nematodes, microarthropods. So then come later in the fall, temperatures start to go down. Those things that eat the bacteria and fungi go back to sleep. And the bacteria and fungi go, wee-haw! And off they are on another cycle. And so people walk out to forest systems and they'll take samples out of the forest system in August when there isn't much fungal biomass out there because it's all been eaten. But that's how nature set up this system. It works great. Right. But if you take your sample in August, you say, Elaine doesn't know what she's talking about. There aren't any fungi in here.
Okay. They'll misinterpret what they found.
Yep. They just aren't aware that there are cycles during the year of the predominance of these different organisms. They should learn to open their eyes instead of their mouth.
Well, going back to this, what you're talking about with the forest, the redwoods, and we're talking about soil and water, what is well-structured soil? Could you speak just a little bit more about the best way to support the structure of the soil and create that?
Well, it's when you look at what makes structure in the soil, it's the bacteria making glues on the outside of their body to pull a piece of organic matter in, and then the bacterium glues to it. And then that bacterium wants to pull this piece of organic matter or that piece of sand or silt or clay so that it surrounds itself with a protective layer so it can't get eaten. Or all, you know, only something like a flagellate might be able to wend its way through the corridors and find that bacteria. And because that bacterium has pulled in lots of organic matter, it starts growing. And so you get a colony of bacteria, and then some of them go off looking for new places to form micro aggregates. So we've got to get all of that soil bound into these micro aggregates if we're going to have good structure. If you pull everything in this volume into this volume, think of all the space that's now available for oxygen and water and your root systems and other organisms coming and moving up and down and having a grand old time. It will never go anaerobic. And that means that there's a lot of pores that are being started to being built. When you just have a micrometer size aggregate, it's not enough to hold a lot of water. Most of your water will infiltrate through and out of the system. Okay, so what's the next step that we need? Well, then we need fungi coming along. Fungi grow as these long strands, and they are going to pull this aggregate in, pull that aggregate in, bind it, just like a Christmas present, all bound up with all the ties and bows. So now you have a macro aggregate. And this is where water is going to get held. Because as water infiltrates and moves into that macro aggregate, all those little pores, all those little places to retain water are going to be filled halfway full with that water. So the whole process of infiltration slows down. So that,
and there's more water being held in the soil.
And if there's any toxic materials in that water, there's the bacteria and fungi going, ooh, that looks yummy. Whereas your plant's root is going to go, oh, I don't want to go near that because it's going to kill me. So we deal with all the pesticides. We deal with the herbicides. We deal with most of the heavy metals are going to be pulled into different holding sites in the soil. so that they are not going to be available to your plant for the next 500 years, the next 250 years. So slowly those things come out. Your plant needs small amounts of most of these heavy metals, not very much. So we want slow release of all of those chemicals that could cause problems in higher concentrations. Slow release, your plant gets what it needs. Everybody's going to be happy. When that plant, falls, when it dies and falls to the surface of the soil, all those heavy metal materials are, again, in very low concentration, and they're in the O horizon, the organic horizon in your soil. So there's, again, more cycling going on from below ground to above ground and back again. And people's
all connected.
Yeah.
And then we're going to take a break right here, and we'll come back more to talk about nutrient cycling and soil and water.
Great.
Hey, listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying Eco Justice Radio. We air every Monday at 9 a.m. on KPFT Houston and every Wednesday at 3 p.m. on KPFK Los Angeles. Stay connected by subscribing to Eco Justice Radio on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows and guests and get connected with us on social media. Today, you are listening to The Soil Food Web, Healing the World's Ecosystems, with host Carrie Kim and guest Dr. Elaine Ingham, founder and president of Soil Food Web Incorporated and director of the Soil Food Web School.
Elaine, so we're back so that you can share a bit more about nutrient cycling, soil, and water. I know you wanted to speak about degraded land.
Yep. Because, I hear a lot of this from places where they've so destroyed the soil. They just have dirt and nothing grows. And so the chemical guys will say, well, that's it. You can't grow anything out there anymore. It's lost to us.
No, forever.
Forever and ever. You can never grow something there again. Well, that's just silliness. We're perfectly capable of getting back in there with the biology and having all of these degraded soils converted back into the most wonderful, incredible soil that will grow your plants and have high nutrient concentrations. The genetic potential of the plant can be realized. Mm-hmm. So don't throw away that degraded soil or that soil that somebody tells you will never grow plants again. It's just not true.
Point of regeneration, right? Regenerative approaches.
We work with some of the boroughs in New York City where they take empty lots that are just horrific to look at. They're just concrete, the whole thing, and weeds growing everywhere. And people say, oh, that's it. You can't grow anything there. Within the first growing season, we can take out all of that cement. We can put in the right biology, the right amount of organic matter, and we can have a yield in the first growing season. So then it's just better and better and better as the years go by.
Now, how about some of these larger areas around the world with desertification? And just also thinking about California, and, water needs water at the same time, right? To restore the water cycle, we need water. So how do we address these massive areas of desertification? What would be your approach? I know there's like Alan Savory and different approaches.
Probably the first thing I want to kind of say is, in California, what did you do with all your rivers and streams and things like that? You put them into concrete bunkers. So the first thing you got to do is go out there and take that concrete away. That's the most stupid thing I've ever seen in my entire life, because it's going to flood. Maybe this year. When's the last time you flooded? Well, you flooded because as you go along the landscape, all of that soil is compacted. And so none of it infiltrates into the soil. And then it hits the concrete bunker and poosh, off it goes. You've got all of that water that should be in the ground.
Right, exactly.
With some of these fires, like in the Paradise Fire in California, we had clients that had gotten their property sprayed with proper sets of microorganisms. So compost, extracts, teas going on. So all of this water was infiltrating into the soil. All of their plants, as late in the summer as that fire happened, all of their plants were still nice and green and fully watered. The fire came zooming up towards them and went around them.
Wow. In paradise.
In paradise. Their property did not burn. That's Everybody amazing. On either side of them burned because they didn't have any water in those trees. And the second spark of fire hits something that has no water in that leaf material in the plant, it's just going to boom. It's going to be a flame of fire. And we got to get people understanding if they want to survive a fire, they need to have good water conditions. And that means that any water that falls on the surface of their soil should infiltrate and be held in that soil and all of that network that the bacteria and fungi, protozoa, and nematodes provide. Keep your
water. Which means they need good soil. They need good soil and good microbiology.
Everything starts with the soil. You cannot keep your property safe if you've got dirt. There's no pesticide in the world to deal with that.
Well, I think that's a concern here too. Now that people are under water restrictions, my concern was that more people would start using more pesticide, you know, because there's this cycle that's being disturbed and that people will turn to that, not realizing that what they actually need is to do the opposite. They need to do things like compost extracts and using biocomplete compost and everything that you're talking about.
Yep. And you want to, they need to keep the water that falls on their own property on their property and not have it eroding down the hill, because that's what's happening now. There's no infiltration. The water goes in for maybe an inch or two. Maybe you see a big puddle happening. That's Mother Nature's, pay attention to this here, because that means all of that water is going to erode, take your soil with it, going to cause all kinds of problems downstream. Mm-hmm. When you think of inorganic fertilizers, you know, something like 60 to 80% of any inorganic fertilizer that you apply, it's a salt, it's going to dissolve in water. And guess where it goes? It goes with that water that is eroding across the surface of the soil. Because you don't have soil, you got dirt. So you're wasting money. All the money, all that money you paid for that inorganic fertilizer, all you did was use that money to destroy water quality downstream from you.
And can you talk about the impact of that salt from the fertilizers too? What happens from the salt?
Where that salt pulls apart when it dissolves in water, the hydrogen from that water molecule combines with the negatively charged part of that inorganic fertilizer. And then the OH combines with the positive part of that inorganic fertilizer. So now that salt is in the water, and that means your plant can't use that drop of water because the charge has been taken up by the inorganic fertilizer. And so if you get too much salt, you're going to kill your plant. And so people who are, you know, put on a little bit of fertilizer, well, that didn't work because the plants didn't grow better. So put on some more.
They double down. Yeah, they double down. That's the same thing as in you know, all of farming, right? Industrial farming scenario. That's the MO, right?
Yep.
Just double
down.
So
when you put inorganic fertilizers on or pesticides, you're taking water away from your plant because your plant can't use something that's that high in salt concentration. It'll kill itself. So it won't take it up, but then it has no water, and so it dies. Pay attention to that information that Mother Nature is sending you. Look for those problems on the leaves first. The instant you see that, you've got to go out and get biology and get that back into your system, and then hope that it's still going to rain another time so you can fill up all of those pores with water, and so your plants will get what it needs.
You know, Elaine, knowing what you know about soil and microbiology, I would imagine you believe it is possible to restore the world's soil faster than we are destroying it.
Yep. But one of the big factors is we've got to stop using inorganic fertilizers and pesticides. And so I feel really happy that the cost of inorganic fertilizers is just skyrocketing.
I think that's
as it should be. Yeah. And pesticides too. You can't even find the pesticides to buy them anymore. So yay, get out there and use the biological approach, because it's easy. Yeah, you know, if you can't make your own compost, convince your neighbor to make that compost. You'll donate all of the organic material. Mm-hmm. Yep, you're gonna take my grass that I just mowed and put it into the compost pile. And here's this high nitrogen containing material. I've got some bean sprouts. I've got whatever. Have your neighbor do it that's interested in building a compost pile. So we have little neighborhood networks. Master Gardeners would be another really good place to go and insist that we're not going to use any of those toxic chemicals. We're going to only use biology. And
starting to have community, community compost.
Yep.
Neighborhood composting. And I think, as you said, it's a great blessing. People are turning more towards regenerative and, like you said, biological, just nature's approaches to manage.
I know that.
Yeah, relate to their plans.
But go get a 50-pound bag, a 10-pound bag, whatever you need, and make an extract out of it. If you want to extend your compost a little bit longer, you make a compost tea, where you actually add food to your compost extract, and you increase the number of organisms because they're growing in that well-aerated brewer, so that you can increase the amount of compost tea that you make and apply out in on your soil, to your foliage, to prevent diseases.
Okay, so you do it on the soil as well. Yep. You use the compost tea sometimes on soil as well. Could you talk about what foods you would add to the tea?
Typically, we're going after something like a humic acid, which is an extract that you make from soft brown coal, which is all plant material that's been compressed under pressure for a long time. You go and mine that and you take out the humic acids by using a water extract typically. And now you can apply those complex fungal foods to your soils if you're just trying to get your fungi to grow, or if you want to grow the organisms in a compost tea, for example, then you add the humic acid there.
Elaine, you are such a wealth of knowledge, and we really all owe a debt to you for having taken up the study of microbiology when it was not something that was encouraged, when it was actually discouraged, when you began. So you really have been an incredible pioneer and visionary in the field and have led so many people down this path of restoring microbiology to the soil and regeneration. So could you tell us a bit of how listeners can connect with you? You've been talking about how they can connect with Soil Food Web consultants to test their own soils and learn more. If you could give a little bit of the contact info again for the Soil Food Web School.
Yep. It's www.soilfoodweb.com is our website. And then if you have questions, for example, like what if you can't find the page with the consultants on it? info@soilfoodweb.com. You kind of get the drift. My email address is eri@soilfoodweb.com. If you want to get a hold of somebody, it's probably better to go to info@soilfoodweb.com because my email is
I'm sure your email box is full all the time.
All the time.
Overflowing.
Yep. And
Elaine,
all I'm going to do is...
Elaine, people talk about the erosion of topsoil. We often hear these statistics that we have 60 years left of topsoil. But do you think, I wonder why it is that we do not hear about the corresponding loss of microbiology? Why do you think that has been so overlooked?
I don't quite comprehend why it's such a difficult thing for people to get, because when we talk with folks one-on-one, they start understanding right away. And everyone always says, this is amazing. Why wasn't I taught this sooner? This is, it's criminal that we've been buying all these things that are destroying our planet. Why didn't somebody say something? Well, look at how the United States is structured. Who's got the power? Who's making the most money? Think about how much money Monsanto made in a single quarter, $5 billion in a single quarter.
Right.
And they've got clout to suppress a lot of this at the universities. And, you know, I taught at university at Oregon State University for 15 years or something like that. And the university, when it came to an issue that Monsanto did not want me to talk about this to anybody. And so they went to the university and said, you know, that $75 million we give you every year as a donation to spend on whatever, that's not going to happen anymore if you don't get rid of her. And so what was the, well, you know, the university, I'm sure the bureaucrats over there, and I can't really blame them. They would go, Elaine Ingham only brings $2 million max into the university on an annual basis. And Monsanto brings us $75 million. Well, how long did it take for them to make the decision? Microsecond?
Right.
A nanosecond? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's just no way to compete with that unless you've got the ethics to say, we're not going to let a company like that drive the university. Well, the university is supposed to be paid for by the people, but the people aren't the people who have clout and decide what the university is going to be focusing on for the next however long. It's the companies like Monsanto. Well, so it's, you know, it, until Monsanto ran into a person who stuck with the course of action and they brought Monsanto to its knees by having a doctor say the only way this person can have this cancer is if they've been breathing in glyphosate. Oh,
exactly.
And finally put Monsanto down. You know, it was bought by Bayer, but.
Right. Yeah. So it continues. It's in a different form. Right. But I think, you know, the thing is that it is a bottom up movement, right? Regeneration, and it is growing and exponentially. So as the more and more people like yourself and all of the people who are studying with you, anyone connected with the regenerative movement, we have to just keep expanding and letting more and more people know about this. If people see just a simple thing like a video of what's in healthy soil versus inert dirt, that alone tells volumes, speaks volumes about life in the soil and nothing growing and alive in dirt.
So come join our classes and get to see all of this and how you can easily make something out of your waste materials. You know, there's no such thing as a waste material. It's all food for somebody else. Make sure you're picking up the right food to grow these organisms, and you can divest yourself of the requirement to buy all these toxic chemicals and very expensive toxic chemicals too.
Yeah, it's for our own health, and it's all related. Yeah. Elaine, thank you so much again for everything that you're sharing and all of the wisdom that you keep propagating out there for future generations. We all need to learn this.
Thank you very much. We will be successful if we've got folks like you that are out there spreading this information to everybody. Can't do it by myself.
Yeah, all hands on deck, definitely.
Absolutely.
Thank you again, Elaine.
Take care.
Hey, listeners, if you want to check out the extended recording of the show, go to wherever you stream your podcasts or our website, ecojusticeradio.org. Thank you to our guest, Dr. Elaine Ingham, and thank you to our listeners for joining us. This has been the Soil Food Web, healing the world's ecosystems. Please connect with us on social media at EcoJustice Radio, SoCal 350, and Adventures in Waste. If you like what you heard and you want others to be informed, you know what to do. Subscribe to our podcast and share the episodes. You've been listening to EcoJustice Radio on KPFK Los Angeles and KPFT Houston, a project of SoCal 350. The show can be found on all major podcast apps and at ecojusticeradio.org. Created by Mark and JP Morse, executive producer Jack Eit, producer and co-host Jessica Aldridge, co-host Carrie Kim, and engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.